The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Sure has been a long, lonely winter for those of us waiting for some action on the global front, on the national front, in terms of making the transition that we know we need to make to renewable energy, and all of a sudden, a ray of sunlight. I swear to God, this is one of the most exciting days that I have been covering this green beat, and I've been doing that since Earth Day 1997. That's just from last century. I'm your host, happy host today, Betsy Rosenberg, and I am thrilled to have with me a guest who was just on the line along with the president of the Maldives. I'm going to tell you about this exciting news. We have two presidents who have just said yes to solar, and I really do think this could be a turning point. I'm talking, of course, about yesterday's exciting news from the White House, from the Obama administration, that the president, our first green president, yes, and first black president, but now he's starting to show his green stripes, true green colors, has just said yes to solar. They've announced that 3 weeks after Bill McKibben and friends brought a solar panel, the original from the Carter White House days, down to D.C., and nothing happened that day or in the days following, but suddenly yesterday they finally saw the light, and they saw that this is a really important and easy way, symbolically, to just say yes to solar, to the new renewable energy future that we must embrace. And so it's very exciting. It is going to happen. And on the heels of that, as if that isn't enough news to celebrate, but Lord knows we can't have too much of that, comes word today that the president of the Maldives, and we all know what's happening with those sinking islands with seas rising, has installed a new solar system on his own house. I was just on a conference call with President Mohamed Nasheed. He's a very young, very brilliant leader, 42 years old, and he is the first democratically elected president in the history of the Maldives. And last March, he said that he was going to make the Maldives the world's first carbon-neutral country within a decade, and he is certainly taking a very first big step to do that. And on that conference call was Danny Kennedy. He is the founder of the company that's making this all possible, another very exciting development, and that is the creation of a company called Sungevity. If you haven't heard about it, you're going to hear a lot about it in the next coming days, but in the next few minutes here, because I'm happy and proud to say that I have the founder of Sungevity, Danny Kennedy, on the line. Thanks for joining me, Danny.
Hi, Betsy. Thank you.
I really am trying to curb my enthusiasm, but heck, I can't. I'm very excited. This is a big day for you, for your company, for the whole planet. Tell us what led up to, first of all, this development, if we can go chronologically, with the White House saying yes to solar, and then we'll find out about today's exciting news in the Maldives, which is where you're speaking to us from, through the magic of technology.
That's right, on a Skype call, of all things. I agree, it's a very exciting day, so wonderful to speak with you and the listeners listening. Chronologically, I guess, you know, the story of Obama's solar White House really goes back, you know, nearly 20 years. I know from John Schaefer, the founder of Real Good Solar, that in the Clinton administration, there were conversations with those guys about putting solar back on the White House, the solar that, of course, Jimmy Carter had put up, and then Ronald Reagan's staff had taken down because it was not a technology befitting a superpower, as they said. So we at Sungevity picked up the cause in early 2010. You know, we thought this would be a great year to be pushing the Obama family as the first family to put solar on the first home as a statement that this stuff works, it saves money, it creates jobs, it's a wise, affordable investment that can save you money, and the taxpayer money in their case, from day one, with some programs like the Sungevity Solar Lease that we offer to our customers. In a lot of ways, we're inspired, actually, Betsy, by the community garden Michelle put in the lawn there, and you know, knew that it would be good for the whole solar industry. It would sort of lift all boats, if you like, because when they planted that community garden in the White House lawn, seed sales across America rose 30% in the subsequent quarter. So, you know, this is an important symbol. It's a signal to the world that the White House is taking this seriously. It is the most powerful institution, if you like, the U.S. government administration is behind this business. And the First Family, with all that chic and cachet that the Obamas still have globally, are sending a signal as well. So, you know, it's important in and of itself. It saves money, saves carbon pollution, creates green jobs. It's also a powerful symbol. And we launched a campaign we called Globama to get the Obamas to adopt solar for their home. We have a petition that we gathered signatures for at solaronthewhitehouse.com. And we did lots of fun and, you know, typical hijinks to try to raise awareness of the cause and carry it on. Lots of people got involved, all the different companies in the solar industry and the Solar Energy Industry Association. And then, of course, 350.org that really tried to take it to the next level, bringing the old solar panels, the modules that were solar hot water systems from the Carter era back to the White House just 3 weeks ago, as you mentioned, in an almost direct action. Which I think upped the ante and really escalated this and put it back in front of the face of the president, who, you know, when I met him on Earth Day at a Rose Garden reception in April, he said he wanted to do this and for us to talk to his people, but his people hadn't been listening very well and it just wasn't moving anywhere. And I think Bill McKibben and the 350.org folk really help bring it over that threshold and make it the clear that it was the no-brainer. We always thought it was.
And you say last Earth Day, and look what's happened since last Earth Day. We had the explosion and the sinking of the oil rig, followed by a perfect storm of extreme weather with the fires that raged in Russia. By the way, that is going to be the subject of our second half of the program. We'll be speaking with someone about what has come out of that disaster. Also, the record floods, epic flooding in Pakistan. And then, of course, the Senate dropping the ball on climate change legislation. So you're right.
Yeah.
It is a no-brainer, and it was initially disappointing when it looked like they were not going to do anything when Bill McKibben and his band of rowdy merrymakers showed up offering something that would so lift the spirits of anybody concerned about our planet. And then all of a sudden, there was a yes. Do you know what led up in those 3 weeks to them finally tuning into their environment and taking the political pulse and seeing that they just needed to do this?
Look, I have to believe it's the latter, the taking the political pulse point and people power, you know, and the fact that Bill and that merry crowd turned up and we had collected tens of thousands of signatures with 350.org demonstrating and demanding the support for this. The National Solar Tour organized by the American Solar Energy Society made Solar in the White House a key cause for them just last weekend. And then there was this sort of comparison, you know, the mouse that roared coming up with the Maldives President Nasheed being willing to take an offer from us to put solar on his house. So all those things combined, I think, just made, you know, the politicians see that this is what the people want. And as usual, politicians follow. That's, you know, the history of social change. And
the mouse that roared, for sure. But, of course, the Maldives are a mighty mouse because they are sort of the poster child of rising sea levels and climate change. How did you come to be the one that installed these solar panels on the president's, I think it's his official residence, is that correct?
Yes, it is a beautiful building here from 100 years or more ago called the Muliage in the local language. And we're lucky enough to be installing it because sort of as an outgrowth of the Globama campaign, we were asked to size systems for other heads of state. And we did that. And the president of the Maldives accepted our offer. You can let these other heads of state, if you go to putsolaronit.com, you'll see some other countries where they haven't been quite so receptive until the Obama announcement yesterday.
And if I can... That guy rocks. I mean, he really opened up the conference call with some really terrific quotes, how this is not about productivity versus the environment. This is not an economic issue. It's a strategic issue. He said it's life or death. He says here we are living out in the middle of the Indian Ocean. We cannot relocate. He said that's not possible. We have the human ingenuity to find the solutions. We have the alternative power sources, and we are going to go carbon neutral. This is a big first step, and if we can do it, anyone can.
That's right. And, you know, what Longevity loves to show is how easy it is. You know, we sat in Oakland, California and designed the system for him. We came out here, you know, just once before the actual installation visit just to make sure the rafters and electrical system could handle the rig. and we've installed it in a matter of a few days without much local trained workforce and so on. It's a pretty straightforward thing, and in America it's even easier. You just jump online, get a quote at Sungevity.com, click to buy a lease for which you put no money down, and then can have a solar system operating within a matter of weeks. That's providing free electricity from the sun, and your bill going forward is probably, in most people's cases, going to be less than the bill they currently pay their utility. So, you know, solar is here now, it's simple, it's affordable, easy to access online at Sungevity. And, you know, this installation in the Maldives kind of proves that point in a most extreme way. This is the farthest point on the planet from the Bay Area, and we're here doing a solar installation we designed sitting in our office a few months ago.
And we have the Progressive Radio Network based in Manhattan. They're bringing us together. You're in the Maldives in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and I'm in the Bay Area, the very green Bay Area. So, yes, here for technology. Hooray. And hooray for today, because among the many exciting developments, we're leading up to the big 10-10-10 action, and this couldn't be coming at a better time to motivate the masses. And what about those, the minority, but the very vocal minority, who are climate change deniers? There was a good quote that came from President Nasheed today. He said, you know, I find myself in this very funny position of having to tell the United States to get a grip on your knowledge, or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he sees the light. A lot of people see the light.
I agree. And you know, I think we should spend less attention worrying about the climate deniers. I mean, there's nothing to deny. It's a matter of fact and science. If you're a rational thinker, then you understand the science. If you're not, you know, what can you do? Dealing with irrational people is only a difficult thing. And our society and civilization is built on rational discourse and politics, which represents it to a large degree. I just think we should move forward and believe that you're right. This is a big month, and it's very optimistic times in a lot of ways, because I think, you know, rather than looking back on October 2010 as some sort of dark, you know, black October, like the Wall Street boys look on some past years, this could be the turning point in which, you know, we saw some political leadership at last, the political will we know we need for renewable energies be adopted en masse. You know, this has not been a technological problem, nor even an economic one. It makes sense, it saves money, but it hasn't had the political will behind it because of the vested interests of coal and oil that back the dirty incumbent technologies. Maybe this is the turning of that tide. This is the high water mark in which we're spinning back the pendulum and getting behind the clean economy, which inevitably will pass. You know, there's no question in my mind, as a rational matter, that 100 years from now we will not be burning buried sunlight and aspirating and putting in the atmosphere to cause climate change. We'll have gotten off that habit and moved to clean energy. So the question is simply, when does that transition take place? If it's sooner, we kill fewer people. If it's later, more suffer. That's the only matter at hand of this century. And, you know, the good news is we might be seeing the start of that turn.
Absolutely. And the other comment that among the many comments from President Nasheed that really resonated is, you know, climate change impact is not someplace else. It's not years down the road. It's happening here today. And he knows from where he speaks, in the middle of the ocean.
Yes.
And low-lying islands, and they are being affected first, and they have a lot of power, you know, to be doing this, so to speak, and now they've got sun power. So before we leave the topic of the deniers and the doubters and the dinosaurs, the fossil fools, as I call them, behind. Just there was a great comment from you in that call about how probably someone from Fox News or the Tea Party was blaming Obama for saying yes to solar, saying this will cost taxpayers money. In fact, that's not the case.
Absolutely. You know, we are, in the case of the Obamas, happy to bid for the system on the basis of our solar lease at Sungevity. Any citizen of America in our service territory can get a solar system for no money down if they've got a 680 credit score, which I assume the Obamas do, and they'll pay monthly as they go. And they'll probably pay less than they currently pay. So, you know, au contraire, whoever the pundit world saying this is a waste of money, it's a savings of money, you know, and this is the hump we have to get over in the head and the subconscious of many Americans, that this stuff is working. It's very, you know, well understood technology, performs at a very high level, and once financed, it will save you money. You know, 100% of our customers save money over the life of their lease. Most of them, 60% of them, save money from day one. And that means they're putting, you know, maybe $20 a month in their pocket compared to what they previously paid their utility. The Obamas, I'm betting, if they went solar substantially, would save hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a month because of the likely load and the price they should be paying for that electricity. And so, you know, it's a nonsense to say that this stuff is more expensive. Our price per kilowatt hour of electricity is less now than much of what comes out of the grid and what Americans pay for. And that's the important fact that really drives the transition we were talking about before. The reason it will be adopted by the millions of units is because it provides the service of electricity for less, as well as the fact that it doesn't kill our kids and the planet as we go.
So are you saying that by removing the technological and financial obstacles, there really is no impediment to scalability? And does that mean that many, many, many more Americans can afford to start putting solar panels not only on their homes and their churches and their synagogues, but perhaps their offices, commercial space, et cetera?
That's exactly our view at Sunjendi, Betsy. You know, we built this business to show how easy it can be. You know, we've basically modeled it on a kind of internet commerce business model where it's almost like an iTunes or Netflix experience. You go online, you fill out a form, you answer some questions, and 24 hours later you get an email with a firm quote. We've designed that using software that takes satellite and aerial photographs to engineer your system, and it's a fully engineered proposal that you get and they're stand by the prices that we're quoting it, and the performance is guaranteed. And you can click to sign the lease online, you know, as an electronic signatures deal. So it's very easy. And then the other barrier, aside from the hassle factor, has been that upfront capital cost. And by getting rid of that with the solar leasing concept, we've made it amenable to most Americans that have a 680 credit score at this time. That's, you know, a fantastic boon because they can now save money by getting cheaper solar electricity through that solar lease. And those two hurdles, the hassle factor and the cost, which we've overcome by putting it at Sunjevity.com with the Sunjevity solar lease, we make it easy and affordable, and that's what will allow it to scale. And, you know, I don't know how big picture you want to go, but I believe personally that 25 to 40% of the electricity grid should be provided by photovoltaics at the point of use, you know, on the skin of the buildings in which the electricity is consumed. There were recently studies of the European market that showed that that was doable today with existing technology on the existing roofs and walls of existing buildings. At 40% penetration, in fact, of the grid. So, you know, the sky's the limit, really. We're at 0.4% in the United States currently of roof spaces having solar. So everyone listening should get out there and get on Sunjevity.com and get a quote to see what their solar options are.
And perhaps invest in a company if it's public. I think
this
is the future.
We're a private business, private company. Okay. But, you know, really would love the business and the referrals and word of mouth to create the buzz, because it really does change the game in terms of accessibility. You know, I use the analogy often. People compare it to cars, and that's a good one. You know, the mass adoption of cars didn't really happen when they were being churned out by Henry Ford so much as when GMAC came along and started to finance them and allow them to be bought by average people without the big upfront costs. Similarly, cell phones, you know, if we were paying for a handset and all the phone calls we make with a cell phone upfront at the start of the time we had the cell phone, we probably wouldn't be all holding cell phones as we do today. But because we pay a small amount or none, and then over time pay for the cell phone and the calls we make on the bill, we have adopted those things, and now they're at like 100% household penetration in America. That's where solar electricity will get to, because once it's financed, it's a no-brainer.
Well, I do think this lease option is brilliant. It seems to be a win-win-win, and if the technology is such that, you know, solar panels are more efficient than ever, as I'm sure your panels and many of the other newer models are, it seems to me that we could also still use a jump start from government. Now, I know in President Obama's stimulus plan, many renewable energy, particularly solar and wind companies, benefited from that, and yet that is being threatened by Republicans and leaders of the Tea Party. I'm threatening to start a Green Tea Party along with others who think we're mad as hell and we're not going to take this anymore,
like
this being the ignoring of our environmental realities. So what is needed, Danny, to really get a boost from the government?
Look, you know, one of the most important things the government's done is a tax credit, which really drives the structured finance product that makes our solar lease possible. That tax credit is a 30% federal tax credit, which investors who have a tax appetite take advantage of, and that's assigned to them through the leasing program. And that needs to be extended and continued, and something called the tax grant needs to be continued by the federal government. That's very important. As important, in my view, is simply a reduction in bureaucracy and red tape. And sorry if I sound like a Tea Party guy right now, but the truth is we spend about three times as much money handling sort of back office functions, permitting and applications for interconnection and rebates and such. We spend three times as much money on that as we do on the installation labor. So, you know, you want to have green collar jobs across America, and you see those as guys in hard hats out on roofs installing solar systems. They can be, but, you know, really we're spending a lot more, and a lot more of the price the end customer pays is paying for paper shuffling in a back office, which is largely unnecessary. And, you know, by comparison, Germany, which has 50% of the world's solar, has much less red tape. If you put a solar system on your house in Germany, you fax a single form in for all three of those functions, the local permitting, the interconnection, and the rebate applications or incentive applications in Germany. You fax a single form into a central repository. In the U.S., you fill, in many cases, 70 pages of paperwork out and then deal with local jurisdictional chiefs and other bosses and handlers of that red tape. So it seems crazy, but that would be a big barrier to the scaling and mass adoption of solar if that was eased or simplified in some way by governments, basically.
Now, I understand you're from Australia. You've had your own problems with fires and heat and drought. What is happening there with the advent of solar and wind and geothermal power? Is Australia waking up like I hope Russia is? And, again, that will be the topic of our interview starting in about 5 minutes here.
Yeah, look, I think in Australia climate realities are biting. As you mentioned, the terrible firestorms experienced in places like Mary's, where dozens of people were killed, are a bit of a wake-up call. Unfortunately, you know, humans seem to be the boiling frog in this case, and we forget some of that. And then the other problem in Australia is that, like the United States, we have King Coal to contend with, and our electricity is artificially cheap. It's falsely subsidized and perversely subsidized. And so the electricity coming from a solar module is challenged in that playing field. It's not level. Plus, the government has been on again, off again in its support of renewables. A bit like the U.S., there's been a horrible brain drain and the loss of intellectual property and competitive advantage. Australia used to be a real leader in photovoltaics, for example, but we've lost some of that know-how over the last decade. So, you know, it's a similar case. The good news is that I think, you know, countries like China and India have very aggressive solar adoption strategies and plans. They're driven largely by the economics of the product and technology. You know, they're trying to put hundreds of millions of people into the service of electricity. They have that right. Those people should get light at night and all the benefits we enjoy from electricity. If they do it with coal, we are cooked. If they do it with clean, we're cool, you know, and that's the challenge of this century, that the Chinese and Indians do scale this technology set and implement it en masse. Our export markets in California and Australia and elsewhere can be a big driver of the volume production that's required to produce these products at scale so that they're cheap enough to be consumed at scale in China and India in coming decades. That's the game, you know. That's what we're doing this decade.
Speaking of cooked, back to the frog soup metaphor, the special problem not only for the frogs but humans as we continue to really ignore somehow still some very, very dire signs is there's no place for us to jump off. This
right.
is the only planet we've got, right?
That's absolutely right. And, you know, like you, I was really struck by President Nasheed this evening. He was so eloquent in speaking about, you know, the Maldivians' fate having been here for 1,500 years and that there really isn't an option to move. And so they have to make this work. I mean, I feel very much we are all Maldivian in our way, sitting on Earth, this island in space that, that provides such beauty and resource and plenty that we've enjoyed but abused. You know, with this mistaken technology, effectively we'll look back at 200 years of history and say, whoops, internal combustion engine and all that burning of fossil fuels was a bad idea, and we will move on from it. It's just how much pain there will be in that transition at this stage.
And President Jimmy Carter is looking smarter by the day, isn't he? Not only did he tell us to put a sweater on, but he put those solar panels on, and I swear when Ronald Reagan took them off, I don't think I've recovered from that shock. I've never been able to understand that one. But at least we don't have to anymore.
It was ideological. You know, I think the Reagan staffer who said we did this because it's not a technology befitting a superpower was actually an honest man and named it as it was. So the good news is we're post that, I think, to a large degree. We're looking at the economics of the technology and the fact that it's better. And now that you have solutions like Sungevity and the solar lease, you can get it easy and affordably online. And so the ideology can be damned and they can go back to their old ways, if they like. But we'll move forward with the Chinese and the Indians and the Maldivians into a cleaner, better future.
And if we are a superpower, we certainly are at the very least super consumers in this country. And since it will take 5 or 6 other planets, if other countries live like we do in terms of consumption, hopefully we are seeing the beginning of supercharging the eco-U-turn. And I want to thank you for your large role in this and for being with us today.
No worries. Thank you so much, Betsy.
And I encourage everybody listening to get out and stage your own event, the big global work party coming up this Sunday, 10-10-10. Bill McKibben and his crew are behind that. They've got some 7,000 different events planned. If you want to find out, go to their website, 350.org. It is exciting. It's needed. It's none too soon. So stay with us. Right after this break, we're going to be speaking with someone who is on top of what the Russian fires means in terms of climate change arrival on that continent and also what it may portend for us. David Gordon, the Executive Director of Pacific Environment, up next. You're listening to The Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. Stay with us on this very exciting green day.